Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunja Bihari Gopijana Balaba Giribhada Dhadi Gopijana Balaba Giribhada Dhadi Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Yamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunja Bihari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravitakacharya All Siddhetta Satishi Shimad His Divine Grace Abhaya Chananada Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Anantakoti Vaishnav Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Brahm Se Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopikabhata Sayam Kun Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavanam Ki Jai Maturanam Ki Jai Jagannathaswami Ki Jai Yamunamai Ki Jai Shrimati Dalasi Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Gaur All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Gaur Premananda. So, Omagana Timidandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshuram Miditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Good to see everybody. So now we're going to continue, and today we are starting the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And for those of you who don't know what the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is about, it is about yoga. And a lot of it's about Hatha Yoga, even though it's not called Hatha Yoga chapter. So we're going to start right now, sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, very excitamente. Okay. Let me do this. Chapter 6. It's called Meditational Yoga. Jhana means to meditate. So, but really there's a lot of Hatha Yoga stuff in there. And some of you who are practicing Hatha Yoga will love this chapter. Until you get to the end when you find out it's not going to work. Which is kind of funny. So, probably it's explained in the beginning of the chapter that Ashtanga Yoga, which is the Hatha Yoga process, that means eightfold, is a mechanical meditative practice, controls the mind and the senses, and focuses concentration on Paramatma, the Super Soul, in the form of the Lord situated in the heart. This practice culminates in Samadhi, full consciousness of the Supreme. And you're going to find out in this chapter why it's impossible. And why Arjuna even thinks it's impossible to do properly. Anyway, so, but it's good to be in good health. So let's start. Clear the screen a little bit here. Okay, and we'll start with Bhagavan Uvacha. Okay. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Nashata Karma Palam Karyam Karma Karotiya sa sanyasi cha yogi cha na niragnir na chakriya. So synonyms, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Lord said, anashita, without taking shelter, karma palam, the result of work, karyam, obligatory karma, work, karoti, performs, ya, one who, sa, he, sannyasi, in the renounced order, cha, also, yogi, mystic, cha, also, na, not, ni, without, agni, fire, na, nor, cha, also, akriyaha, without duty. So, translation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, one who is unattached to the fruits of his work and who works as he is obligated is in the renounced order of life, and he is the true mystic, not he who lights no fire and performs no duty. So the word used here in this verse is very interesting. Sa-sanyasi to yogi cha. Because generally when you have the word sannyasi, that means someone who actually is in the formal order of sannyas. But here, Krishna is actually giving a functional definition of sannyas. Because many times we find people who take the formal order of sannyas who are actually attached. Now, let me give you a practical example of this. Once upon a time, it's a story, there was a great devotee named Ramanujacharya. And Ramanujacharya had some sannyasi disciples, and he had some household disciples. So in this particular case, the sannyasis and brahmacharis were more attached than the householders. And he proved it to the sannyasis, because these sannyasis, they were thinking, oh, we are so renounced. We are so detached. We are great. And Ramanujacharya thought, and they were also criticizing a particular householder whose name was Donner Das. Okay. So they were criticizing him and saying, he's so attached. He has a wife, a beautiful wife. And so, actually, they were meditating more on the guy's wife than the guy was meditating on his own wife. Anyway, so what happened is that Ramanujacharya wanted to show the sannyasis they were actually not as renounced as the householders. So what he did, or this particular householder, is one night while the sannyasis and brahmacharyas were sleeping, he switched all their clothes and belongings from one sannyasi brahmachari to another. So generally, let me explain the system in the ashram. When you go to sleep, usually you have all your belongings right by your head. That's renounced sannyasi. Of course, I have all my belongings in my house, so it's right by my head too, I guess. So anyway, because in the beginning days of the movement, it was like that too. We all had, including sannyasis, we all had maybe one box full of belongings, and that was it. That was it, nothing else. And of course, when one gets married, that box expands to a whole moving van. But that's another story. So so Ramanujacharya switched all the belongings of the sannyasis and brahmacharis, and when they woke up in the morning, they accused each other of stealing each other's stuff. And there ensued a fight amongst the brahmacharis and sannyasis. Hey, you took my stuff, hey, my stuff. And Ramanujacharya said to them, okay, you think you are very renounced? Okay, we're going to show you how this household is more renounced. Okay, so then he assigned about two of his devotees to go over to this householder's house. While the householder wasn't there, he had the householder talking to him, Ramanujacharya. And so these devotees snuck over to the house and they were instructed to steal this householder's wife's jewelry. And they waited until she was lying down. And as she was lying down, somehow or other, they took the jewelry off her body. I mean, it's really not an occupation for a sannyasi, but guru orders, I guess you got to do it. So, and then she turned over and they got scared and they ran away. So half of her body had jewelry, the other half didn't have jewelry. And so Then Ramanujacharya told his brahmachari sannyasis, look in the window at this person's house and see what this person does when he goes home to see his wife. So this devotee, Dhanurdas, married devotee, goes home. He sees his wife with half of her body with jewelry and the other half no jewelry. And he says to his wife, what's happening? And she explains, well, the brahmacharis came over, and the sannyasis came over, whatever, and they took off half of my jewelry, and I turned over so they could get the other half off. And Dhanurdas chastises his wife, why'd you scare them off? Why didn't you just give it all to them? And you see, they were both so renounced and dedicated to their guru, and to Krishna, obviously. And that's much more than the so-called brahmacharis and sannyasis were. Of course, they weren't so-called. They were real brahmacharis and sannyasis. So that's really what Krishna is indicating here as someone who is a sannyasi in essence. Because what does the word sannyas mean? Most people don't understand. They think it means someone who gets all the glories. Yeah, it's a pretty good definition. Anyway, so they think it's someone who gets all the glories and all the worship and, you know, just, it's like retired life at 30. Like I took sannyasa at 28, so I retired at 28. So Krishna addresses this here, but it's not like that. So anyway, so the word sannyas means, sun means to accept, nyas means to reject. So this is connected with Lord Chaitanya's first two surrendering principles, which are accept everything favorable for Krishna, reject everything unfavorable to serve Krishna. So that's what a sannyasi is. It's not a change of dress in essence. Of course, we do have a formal sannyas, you know, so people like me can get something to eat, but that's another subject matter. But really, real sannyas is like that. Anyone in any ashram can be a real sannyasi without taking the title and getting all the proper adoration, distinction, and mahaprasadam. And frankly speaking, at my age, I can't eat mahaprasadam anyway. So this is what Prabhupada says here. Not someone who makes a show of just being mystic and lighting no fire and not doing anything and just sitting and eating mahaprasadam. So real sannyasi is someone who serves Krishna and rejects things that are not favorable for serving Krishna. Simple. Very, very simple. Krishna's making his point here. In this chapter, the Lord explained that the process of the Eightfold Yoga System is a means to control the mind and senses. However, this is very difficult for people in general to perform, especially in the age of Kali. Although the Eightfold Yoga System is recommended in this chapter, the Lord emphasizes that the process of Karma Yoga, or acting in Krishna consciousness, is better. The Karma Yoga means serving Krishna with one's work. Everyone acts in this world to maintain his family and their paraphernalia, but no one is working without some self-interest, some personal gratification, be it concentrated or extended. The criterion of perfection is to act in Krishna consciousness. In other words, everyone's acting. Even the yogi who wants liberation, he's acting for himself. I want to get the heck out of here. Or I want to experience spiritual bliss. Or some yogis, they want to have the yoga powers where they can reach out to some distant place and take whatever they want. Or they can become lighter than the air. Or they can become heavier than, let's say, whole planet. So, the criterion of perfection is to act in Krishna consciousness, not with a view to enjoying the fruits of work. To act in Krishna consciousness is the duty of every living entity because we are all constitutionally parts and parcels of the Supreme. The parts of the body work for the satisfaction of the whole body. The limbs of the body do not act for self-satisfaction, but for the satisfaction of the complete whole. Similarly, the living entity who acts for the satisfaction of the Supreme Whole and not for personal satisfaction is the perfect sannyasi, the perfect yogi. So that's what a yogi is. And that's what a sannyasi is. Otherwise, they are not sannyasis or yogis. Even if they dress like it, they are bogies. So a bogie is someone who's simply interested in enjoying a sense of taking advantage of Krishna in this material world. That's a bogi. And a yogi is someone who's connecting to Krishna. And a sannyasi is someone who's connecting to Krishna by accepting everything favorable, rejecting everything unfavorable. And that's the definition. That's what the real meaning is. The sannyasi sometimes... So this is... Now Prabhupada is talking about sannyasi in a formal sense in this paragraph. The sannyasis, that means the formal sannyasis, sometimes artificially think that they have become liberated from all material duties, and therefore they cease to perform Agnihotra yagyas, fire sacrifice. But actually they are self-interested because their goal is to become one with the impersonal Brahman, just about themselves. Such a desire is greater than any material desire, but is not without self-interest. So material desires are summarized in this one interesting verse, Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kam. What does that mean? One is interested in growth, in sense gratification in this world, one interested in liberation, or one is interested in powers, becoming very powerful. Imagine if you could levitate. I remember in the 1960s and 70s, there was a bogi yogi who was offering, bogi yogi means, it's actually a contradiction, it's what we call an oxymoron. The bogi is one who wants to enjoy this world, the yogi is one who wants to be Krishna conscious and not interested in enjoying the world. So anyway, so bogi yogi means like an imitation yogi, who was selling classes in levitation. So, what does that mean? Selling classes in levitation? Well, I think it was about $125, $135. And he had videos, not on the internet, because there wasn't an internet then, but there were videos of him or people bouncing up in the air. Of course, they were actually bouncing on their beds or a trampoline or something. One time, I even had the devotees take a picture of me when I was on a trampoline, when I was up in the air, and just put it on the internet. And so people would think that I am a yogi. Similarly, the mystic yogi who practices the yoga system, because people like that. You know, if you get powers. Powers. You know, people want that. To control others, that powers, that wealth, to be famous. This makes people happy. I mean, you look at all these famous people. If you read the news or hear the news, you hear about all these famous people, their marriages don't work, they're unhappy, many of them commit suicide, they die at an early age. So the mystic yogi, practicing the yoga system with half open eyes, we describe, ceases in all material activity, desires some satisfaction of personal self. But a person acting in Krishna consciousness works for the satisfaction of the whole, without self-interest. Krishna consciousness, he's selfless. He's a hero. Real hero does things for others' benefit and sacrifices his life. That's a hero. We want heroes like this. We want to look up to heroes like this. We want role models like that. A Krishna conscious person has no desire for self-satisfaction. His criterion of success is the satisfaction of Krishna, and thus he is the perfect sannyasi or perfect yogi. Lord Chaitanya, the highest perfectional symbol of renunciation, prays in this way. Nadanam najanam nasundarim kapitam ba jagadichyakam maye mama janmani janmani shvare bhavata mokyurahuitaki. It's from the Shikshashtika, verse 4. Oh, Almighty Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth, nor to enjoy beautiful women, nor do I want any number of followers. What I want only is the cause and mercy of your devotional service in my life, birth after birth. Another way of translating that aspect of beautiful women would be Sundari Kavitam, which means verses, beautiful verses, someone who's really enamored by poetry or beautiful words and things like that. So there's, if one understands Sanskrit, there's different ways that one can translate or interpret a particular verse that don't deviate from the original intention. So, next one. Yam sanyasam iti prahur yogam tam vidhi pandava naya sanyasta sangalpo yogi bhavati kaschana. Yam what? Sanyasam, renunciation iti thus prahu, they say. Yogam, linking with the supreme tam, that vidhi, you must know. Pandava, son of Pandu, not never, he certainly. Asanyasta, without giving up, sankalpa, desire for self-satisfaction. Yogi, a mystic transcendentalist, bhavati becomes. Kaschana, anyone. So what is called renunciation, you should know to be the same as yoga, or linking oneself with the Supreme. Here, Krishna is referring to renunciation of things that are not pleasing to Krishna. Or son of Pandu, for one can never become a yogi unless he renounces the desire for sense gratification. So this is the first point. You want to be a yogi? All right. Here we go. Don't call yourself a yogi. I remember many years ago we were preaching at the universities and we were explaining, because yoga was popular then as it is now, that one of the things we said is you may think that you're practicing yoga and your teacher, yoga teacher, is a yogi, but in common parlance, of course we didn't say bogey, in common parlance, your teacher is a gym teacher. That's it. He's teaching you exercises, just like you took gym. Of course, gym means basically physical education, for those of you who don't know. And so when I was young, we had physical education. And so, you know, it's a type of physical education. It's fine. It makes you healthy. Like when Prabhupada was on his morning walk one time, the devotees passed by someone standing on his head, their head, and they asked Prabhupada, you know, they were making fun, and Prabhupada said, no. In this way, it's good for the health. So, of course, Prabhupada didn't advocate that everybody get into it, but, you know, people can do it for their health. It's like Prabhupada wanted devotees to exercise. There's an interesting story. Once upon a time, there were some really young sannyasis, wasn't me, don't worry, and their minds were agitated because they had so much passion when you're young. You know, passion. Their minds were agitated, and they said, what can we do? You know, we're just like brimming over with energy. You know, we don't want to go crazy or run away or whatever. And Prabhupada said, play some sports. So some of the sannyasis began to play immediately basketball. So there's nothing wrong, Prabhupada said. You know, there can be some sports. Of course, the preferable Vaishnava sport is swimming. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates, they would play Krishna-played sports. Not sports that would damage their brains, like modern-day sports, that people end up with concussions by the time they're 30. They end up as blathering idiots. You know, how could someone do that to one of their children? It just bewilders me. You know, how people could really, like, do that to their children, like, for their whole lives, the kid's going to be damaged goods. So anyway, so yoga's fine. You know, the different asanas are fine. Go ahead. And, you know, there can be preliminary. So real sannyasa yoga bhakti means that one should know its constitutional position as a living entity and act accordingly. The living entity has no separate independent identity. He's the marginal energy of the Supreme. When he is entrapped by material energy, he is conditioned, and when he is Krishna conscious or aware of the spiritual energy, then he is in his real and natural state of life. Don't we want to be natural? Therefore, when one is in complete knowledge, one ceases all material sense gratification and renounces all kinds of sense gratificatory activities. As I mentioned previously, don't worry, it'll take some time. Don't get an anxiety about it. This is practiced by the yogis to restrain the senses from material attachment. But if you're going to do hatha yoga, you better be ready to do it right now, lady or man. But a person in Krishna consciousness has no opportunity to engage his senses in anything which is not for the purpose of Krishna. Therefore, a Krishna conscious person is simultaneously a sannyasi and a yogi. And automatically, you get to be those things. The purpose of knowledge and restraining the senses as prescribed in the jnana and yoga processes is automatically achieved in Krishna consciousness. If one is unable to give up the activities of his selfish nature, then jnana and yoga are of no avail. In other words, bhakti can be practiced right now, but a prerequisite to do the yoga system properly, one has to give up activities of a selfish nature. That's really hard. In bhakti, you can take up, you can be the most selfish creep on the planet, and you could take up bhakti yoga right away. And you won't remain the most selfish creep on the planet, because naturally the desires will go away. I mean, the story of Dhruva Maharaj, he wanted, he wasn't a creep, but he was thinking of himself. He was thinking, I want the greatest kingdom imaginable. But when he saw Krishna, he forgot it. That desire melted away by the process of bhakti. So the real aim is for the living entity to give up all self-satisfaction, be prepared to satisfy the Supreme. A Krishna-conscious person has no desire for any kind of self-enjoyment. He is always engaged for the enjoyment of the Supreme. One who has no information of the Supreme must therefore be engaged in self-satisfaction, because no one can stand on the platform of inactivity. All purposes are perfectly served by the practice of Krishna consciousness. That's very easy to understand. Arurukshor munir yogam karma karanam uchite yogarudashita shaiva shamakaranam uchite. Arurukshor, who has just begun yoga, mune of the sage, yogam. The Eightfold Yoga System, Karma, Work, Karanam, the means, Uchite is said to be, Yoga, Eightfold Yoga, Arudasha, of one who has attained, Tasha is his, Eva certainly, Shema, cessation of all material activities, Karanam, the means, Uchite is said to be. For one who is a neophyte in the Eightfold Yoga System, work is said to be the means. And for one who is already elevated in yoga, cessation of all material activities is said to be the means. In other words, when you're first starting, you got to do all this stuff, and but you're already established in yoga, samadhi. You know, that's it. I mean, you can just like sit there and be absorbed. Of course, you won't do that because you want to help people. That's the point. If you're already elevated in yoga, you're going to want to help people. You're not going to just think, "Hey, I got it made," but you become selfless at that point. The process of linking oneself with the Supreme is called yoga. It may be compared to a ladder for attaining the topmost spiritual realization. This ladder begins from the lowest material condition of the living entity and rises up to perfect self-realization and pure spiritual life. According to various elevations, different parts of the ladder are known by different names. But all in all, the complete ladder is called yoga. It's a yoga ladder and may be divided into three parts: jnana yoga, jhana yoga, and bhakti yoga. Jnana yoga means trying to figure things out. Jnana means knowledge. Jhana means meditational yoga. Specifically, we're mentioning the Ashtanga yoga and bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotion. By being devoted, you can be focused. You don't really have to do anything else once you're devoted. It's like if a mother is devoted to her child, she doesn't have to practice exercises to be devoted to her child. It's not that the mother says, "I don't love you enough, let me go and sit and chant for a while, let me go and do things with my body, let me go and figure out," or even, you know, jnana yoga, "let me go and figure out what is our relationship. You are my child, I am mother, supposed to love, love, love." No. It's spontaneous. It's just like so darn easy. The beginning of the ladder is called the Yoga Rudraksha stage, and the highest rung is called Yoga Arudra. Concerning the Eightfold Yoga System, attempts in the beginning to enter into meditation through regulative principles of life and practice of different sitting postures, which are more or less bodily activities, are considered fruit of material activities. All such activities lead to achieving perfect mental equilibrium to control the senses. When one is accomplished in the practice of meditation, he ceases all disturbing mental activities. And it's really hard to be accomplished in that way. A Krishna-conscious person, however, is situated from the beginning on the platform of meditation because he is always thinking of Krishna and being constantly engaged in the service of Krishna. he is considered to have ceased all material activities. For example, some of the devotees here in Nugaloka, they'll get up early in the morning and go to the program in the morning, and then they'll do some work during the day, like there's one devotee, Shruti Priya, go out and do the garden. She was clearing out all the weeds today. And that's Krishna. She's absorbed in offering to Krishna, so she's thinking of Krishna 24 hours a day. Pretty cool. And it's so easy. If you have something you like to do, and you do it for Krishna, you're thinking of Krishna. That is so easy. I mean, it's incredible. Amazing. So don't spend time doing a long process. Yadahi nendriyarteshu nakarmashvanu sajjate savasankalpa sanyasi yoga rudas tadochite. Yada, when, he certainly na, not indriya arteshu, in sense gratification, na, never. Karamasu, in fruitive activities, anusajjate, one necessarily engages. Sarvasankalpa, of all material desires, sannyasi, renouncer, yoga, aruda, elevated in yoga, tada, at that time, uchate is said to be. Translation, a person is said to be elevated in yoga when, having renounced all material desires, he neither acts for sense gratification or engages in fruitive activities. That's pretty self-explanatory. In other words, he just does things for Krishna. When a person is fully engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, he is pleased in himself, and thus he's no longer engaged in sense gratification or fruitive activities. Otherwise, one must be engaged in sense gratification. You know, there's no other alternative. Since one cannot live without engagement, breathing at least, without Krishna consciousness, one must be always seeking self-centered or extended selfish activities. Extended selfish means based on things that are connected to this body. Even to the limit of humanitarian activities are extended selfish activities because we're identifying as human beings. Selfless activities would mean working for the welfare of all living entities, not exploiting certain species so your species can be happier. In other words, not by eating meat, just to put it in common language, not by eating meat, you know, satisfying everybody's tongue, that is actually welfare work. Or when they say it's humanitarian, I'm going to distribute food to the poor, starving people, and the food I'm going to distribute will be meat. No. Distribute food, yes, but distribute prasadam, distribute vegetarian food that's offered to Krishna. So, without Krishna consciousness, I'm repeating the sense, one must always be seeking self-centered or extended selfish activities. One's not thinking of pleasing Krishna and doing activities for Krishna. One is just thinking of themselves, you know. Let me get liberated, let me get power, let me get this, let me get that. I want, like a baby. But a Krishna conscious person can do everything for the satisfaction of Krishna and thereby be perfectly detached from sense grad. One who has no such realization must mechanically try to escape material desires before being elevated to the top rung of the yoga ladder. Top rung of the yoga ladder is bhakti. It's struggle, it's hard. And Krishna's going to get into some of the details in this chapter. Udared atmanatmanam, not amanam, avasadhyat, atmaiva yatmano bandur atmaiva ripur atmana. Udared, one must deliver atmana by the mind, atmanam, the conditioned soul, na, never, atmanam, the conditioned soul, avasadhyat, put into degradation, atma, mind, eva, certainly, he, indeed, atmanaha, of the conditioned soul, bandhu, friend, atma, mind, eva, certainly, it's really interesting, ripu, enemy, atmanaha, of the conditioned soul. So you notice how many times atma is used here, or derivation of atma in this verse. One must deliver himself with the help of his mind and not degrade himself. This is important. Because before we talk about the intelligence controlling the mind, and we need the help of the mind. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. So the whole point of this yoga system and bhakti yoga system is to control the mind. But in the hatha yoga, it's like forceful. In bhakti yoga, it's by a higher attraction or a higher pleasure. So when the mind is uncontrolled, it's your enemy, and Krishna will talk about that. The word Atma denotes body, mind, and soul, depending on different circumstances. In the yoga system, the mind and the conditioned soul are especially important, since the mind is the central point of yoga practice. Atma here refers to the mind. The purpose of the yoga system is to control the mind and to draw it away from attachment to sense objects, acchara. It is stressed here that the mind must be so trained that it can deliver the conditioned soul from the mire of nescience. Train the mind. The material existence, one is subjected to the influence of the mind and the senses. So, you know, the mind is accepting, rejecting things, depending upon what mode of nature it happens to be attracted to or influenced by at that particular moment. In fact, the pure soul is entangled in this material world because the mind is involved with a false ego. False ego, as we described before, means I and mine. I and mine. And when Krishna says, or Krishna's representative says to do something, you just say, no, this is my I want to do that. That's fine. Actually, we have to be merciful. Which, actually, Krishna gives people enough rope to hang themselves, and sometimes they do. Who desires to lord it over the false ego desires to lord over material nature. Therefore, the mind should be trained so it will not be attracted by the glitter of material nature. And in this way, the conditioned soul may be saved. So, glitter, in this particular context, it means, you know, it's real shiny and everything like that, but what's behind it? It's like a movie set. When I was very young, I went to California with a group of young people, and we went to this place called, let's see if I remember, Knott's Berry Farm. And there they had different movie sets set up to show how westerns were actually filmed. Westerns means people like cowboys and Indians, you know, stuff like that. And each and every one of those sets was just a what we call facade. It was a front of a bar or front of a store, and behind the front portion there was just what we call scaffolding, you know, it's just support wood. So all my illusions were destroyed at that point. And I didn't take up Krishna consciousness then. But my illusions about the movies, you know, the John Wayne movies, of course, for most of you don't know what I'm talking about, cowboy movies, was actually destroyed when I saw really what was behind the movie set. And other times, too, one time I was attached to this one TV show where there were puppets, and I thought, oh, those puppets are so sweet, you know, this, that. My mother got me a ticket to go to that TV show. And I just watched. The puppets were controlled. They were marionettes. They were controlled by people who were above them. And my illusion was dispelled. I thought these puppets were actually, you know, real. So it's like that. You know, we see this facade, this illusion. It glitters. They say all the glitters is not gold. And then we go for it. And ain't nothing there. Or, you know, worse, you got to work for it. And then there's nothing here. One should not degrade oneself by attraction to sense objects. The more one is attracted by sense objects, the more one is entangled in material existence. The best way to disentangle oneself is to always engage the mind in Krishna consciousness. You know, thinking about Krishna, serving Krishna, you know, what is it? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, etc. Hearing, chanting, remembering, offering obeisances, offering prayers, serving the lotus feet, becoming the friend of Krishna, surrendering, etc. The word he is used for emphasizing this point that one must do this. It is imperative. It's also said, mana eva manushanam karanam bandha mokshaya bandhaya vishaya sango muktyar nir vishayam manahan. For man, the mind is the cause of bondage, and the mind is the cause of liberation. Mind absorbed in sense objects is the cause of bondage, and mind detached from the sense objects is the cause of liberation. And this is from the Upanishads, the Amrita Bindu Upanishad. It means the drop of nectar Upanishad. That's a beautiful name, too. Therefore, the mind, which is always engaged in Krishna consciousness, is the cause of supreme liberation. And here's what I was talking about before. Bandur atmat manas tasya yinat mayuvat mana jitaha anat manas tu shatrutve varte tat mayva shatruvat. The word shatru means enemy, so let's go on. Bandhu, friend. Atma, the mind. Atmanha, the living entity. Tasya, of him, yena, by whom. Atma, the mind. Eva, certainly. Atmana, by the living entity. Jitaha, conquered. Anatmanaha, of one who has failed to control the mind. Two, but. Shatrutve, because of enmity. Vartita, remains. Atma, eva, the very mind. Shatru, but, as an enemy. From one who has conquered the mind is the best of friends. But for one who has failed to do so, the mind will remain the greatest enemy. This is a key verse in the Bhagavad Gita. In other words, if your mind is just dragging you here and there, that's your enemy. Because you have no freedom. You're a slave. A slave is one who is forced by someone else to act without getting any payment. And that's what we're doing. You don't get payment when you follow the mind. What is the payment? You don't get happiness. So, you get frustration, like that song, can't get no satisfaction. The purpose of practicing Eightfold Yoga is to control the mind in order to make it a friend in discharging the human mission. In other words, this is what I want in life. Mind, listen. Do. Right now. Just like in the army, it's basic training. So we need to go through this basic training. Train the mind. Mind may be saying, no, can't do. It's too much. What happens in basic training, if you go to the Army, Air Force, whatever, and you say, it's too much. You're too cruel to me, my dear drill instructor. Then you have to do more push-ups. Anyway, unless the mind is controlled, the practice of yoga for show is simply a waste of time. It's a waste of time. One who cannot control his mind lives always with the greatest enemy, and thus his life and its mission are spoiled. Heavy statements. The constitutional position of the living entity is to carry out the orders of the superior. As long as one's mind remains an unconquered enemy, one has to serve the dictations of lust, anger, avarice, illusion, etc. You know, lust doesn't mean just like, you know, some bad movie. Lust means, you know, profit, adoration, distinction. I want to be the center. I want to be famous. Like, that's all lust. I'm not ready just to be happy in my loving relationship with Krishna, because the opposite of lust is love. And love means that you simply care for the welfare or the happiness of someone who you love. Actually, obviously. So if one is actually thinking in a self-centered way, just doing for himself and not thinking of others, and Krishna especially, and then continually being overcome by anger, wow, anger is a big one. Avarice, more and more. Illusion. I am the body. I am the controller. I'm the center. Then you're dealing with your enemy. Not the brain, of course. I'm pointed here, but it's not the brain. But when the mind is conquered, one voluntarily agrees to abide by the dictation of the personality of Godhead, who is situated within the heart of everyone as Paramatma. One becomes happy. I remember when I first took up Krishna consciousness, certain things were really hard for my mind. Like waking up early. You know, I was used to, like everybody else, waking up late, breakfast in bed. I came from a wealthy family, so we had special trays that would slip around the bed so I could just, like, eat breakfast in bed and be served. in so many different ways. That's not why you take sannyas. Anyway, so waking up early was just like, what? And what to speak of other things that we had to do, like cleaning. I never cleaned, well, I can't say never, but hardly ever cleaned. I mean, that's what I thought mothers were for. That was my definition. Mother equals cleaning lady. So I had to learn all these things, you know, just wake up early, chant, control the mind. And it really helped immensely. That's why I'm here today, because I was able to control the mind. Whew. So, and one voluntarily agrees, I'm reading, and to abide by the dictation of the personality of Godhead, who is seated within the heart as everyone is Paramatma. Real yoga practice entails meeting the Paramatma within the heart and then following his direction. Wow, that's real yoga. For one who takes the Krishna consciousness directly, perfect surrender to the dictation of the Lord follows automatically. Maybe we'll just have time to read another verse. Chitatmana prasantasya paramatma samahitaha sitoshna sukaduki shudata manapamana yoho jitatmanaha. A one who has conquered the mind, prasantasya, who has attained tranquility by such control over the mind, Parama Atma, the super soul, Samahitaha, approach completely Shita and cold, Ushna, heat, Sukha, happiness, Dukesha, and distress. Tata also, Mana and honor, Apamanayoho, and dishonor. For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. Wow! For such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor are all the same. Wow. So what does it mean? When you're able to conquer the mind, then you're able to take direct directions from the intelligence. The intelligence is the form direction of the super soul. And so you have a clear mind. You know what is to be done. You're not just like, I'm being forced to do this, I'm being forced to that. You're not being forced. Your mind is forcing you. So then you just become equipoised all the time. And really Shanti. Actually, every living entity is intended to abide by the dictation of the Supreme Personality, Godhead, who is seated in everyone's heart as Paramatma. When the mind is misled by the external illusory energy, one becomes entangled in material activities. Therefore, as soon as one's mind is controlled through one of the yoga systems, one should be considered to have already reached the destination. One has to abide by superior dictation. When one's mind is fixed on the superior nature, he has no alternative but to follow the dictation of the Supreme. The mind must admit some superior dictation and follow it. The effect of controlling the mind is that one automatically follows the dictations or the dictation of the Paramatma or Supersoul. So it's not like forced dictation, you know, dictation, dictator. It's not out of love. You said, doing it out of love. Automatically means it's just love. Because this transcendental position is at once achieved by one who is in Krishna consciousness, the devotee of the Lord is unaffected by the dualities of material existence, namely distress and happiness, cold and heat, etc. This state is practical samadhi, or absorption in the Supreme, not just sitting there and being unconscious and staring at the tip of your nose. That's practical samadhi. Because you're controlling the mind. The mind... it's transparent. The mind is actually transparent between the Paramatma, the super soul, the intelligence, and goes right to the person's activities and heart, too. Savaimana Krishna Padara Vindayo. That's the whole process. So, on that happy note, tomorrow we'll continue with text 8. We will take some questions when we free you from being muted. Hold on one second. Takes a second to free everybody. Okay. You are officially free from being muted. So who wants to ask a question? Anyone want to ask a question? Oh, it looks like Pranesha. Pranesha, you're in the dark.
I just came out.
He just came out of the prison. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
Yes. Okay, Guru's question is how to give up.
What?
How to give up selfish nature?
How to give up your envious nature? Is that what you're saying?
Selfish nature.
Selfish nature. Love Krishna and think of what Krishna wants. How does a mother give up her selfish nature? She's thinking of her little baby all the time. So, I'm not saying you should have babies, but you should think of, you should actually start to think about Krishna and your wonderful spiritual master. Oh my God. That's an advertisement, if I ever heard one. Anyway, so you should start to think about Krishna, what will please him. Krishna is a person. You understand? Like what I'm thinking of Prabhupada, what will please him? That's why we're going on the internet, talking to people. Otherwise, you know, if I didn't do that, I'd probably be in Hawaii surfing right now with some of my disciples who would be glad to get me a place in Hawaii. But no. Anyway, so that's the point. You do things out of love. Why does a mother do things? It's very easy. A mother is the least selfish person on this earth, planet, other than pure devotees. I mean, like your mother. When I met your mother, every time she was talking to me about your welfare, she was crying. I remember you didn't even want me to speak to your mother after some time because she would always cry and embarrass you out of love. So that's pure devotion. No, it's not. But anyway, it's a representation of what pure devotional service can be. It's called a vibhava. Vibhava means something that stimulates your emotions. So you stimulated your mother's emotions. And even my mother sees me, I make a video call to her, she just loses her mind in ecstasy. And she's my best disciple. Willing to do anything I ask. Anyway, so that's the point. Okay? Okay, who else has a question? Oh, Rishikesh, the controller of the senses.
Gurudev, I just want to take some advice from you regarding, you know, you basically enjoy senses on the pretext of Krishna consciousness. And for example, prasadam, you know, some popular prasadam, you know, you tend to have that enjoyment spirit, I want to go to eat this way.
Yes.
So how do I control that, Gurudev? It's kind of hard, you know, sometimes.
Okay, that's a good question. One way you control is after a while you get gout. I don't know if any of you know what gout is. Gout is a disease when you're eating too opulent food and then all your different limbs start to hurt a little bit and your feet swell up and everything like that. How do you control it? You think, you know, seriously, you think when you're taking prasadam, this prasadam is Krishna. You're not eating prasadam, you're worshiping prasadam, you're honoring prasadam, as Prabhupada said. That's how. When Prabhupada took prasadam, he would actually meditate and sit quietly. I'm just muting you because you're making noise. Prabhupada would meditate and actually sit quietly and meditate. He wouldn't even talk usually during prasadam. He would just like meditate on the taste and chew everything thoroughly. And in this way, he connected to Krishna through prasadam. So prasadam is Krishna, but we have to be aware of it simultaneously. So as we're, whatever we do in this world that's enjoyable, then we have to think I'm doing it for pleasing Krishna. Just like I'm talking on the internet to all of you, and actually I'm enjoying myself. I'm not just miserable. Oh my God, I got to go on the internet again and talk to all these rascals. No, I'm not thinking like that. I am thinking this, I get a chance to serve Prabhupada. I'm doing it to serve Prabhupada. And therefore, enjoy. There's nothing wrong with enjoying if one has the right spirit when they're enjoying. Understanding is Krishna. Krishna's giving us this bliss. So, okay. Who else has an experience? Maharaj,
please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Gurudev. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj, I'd like to humbly request you to please keep my husband Rajendra in your prayers. He was admitted yesterday with cellulitis and kidney failure. So please keep him in your prayers.
I will definitely pray for him. Do they have him on dialysis now or what?
No, they're still doing a plan. This just happened, I saw the redness in his leg, the right leg. The left is already amputated. So then took him to the hospital. So they are just not doing all the tests and everything. So please, your humble mercy.
I will definitely pray for him.
And all the Vaishnav devotees, please pray for my husband, Rajendra.
Yes, Sudharma, we will all pray for Rajendra. Yes, he's my dear friend.
Yes. He misses you so much, Maharaj. He was just saying yesterday, have you told Maharaj? I said, yeah, I'll tell Maharaj tomorrow because it was late. So then,
I will definitely pray for him, no doubt about it. And just tell him I'm thinking of him and tell him he's my dear friend.
Thank you. Okay? Thank you so much, Maharaj.
Those words. Thank you. Yeah, Sudharma is in New Zealand. And that reminds me, we should all pray for Bhakti Churu Maharaj, my dear friend, who is still in the hospital recovering. Hopefully the recovery will go quickly from the coronavirus. And this is, it's a message for all of you. Just be careful. It's not, this virus is not something just made up. It's not just like some political trick or something like that. It's real. It's real. So please be careful. I know America has the highest rate practically in the world of this virus. So who else has a question?
Hare Krishna, Gurudev.
Okay, Sumukh.
Yes, Gurudev.
Okay.
There's a simple question. This is regarding when we have fingernails in our hand, we have hair on our head, and it's growing, but we never see it grow. After some time, we see it after 3 days, then we can see that, the fingernail has grown and we cut it. So a few days, we see the hair has grown, cut it. So we don't actually see the time factor. We see after it's happened. But when
it's growing, it's very subtle. It's very subtle, right.
Yes, my age is also going, and I don't see it, but after some time, you can see the symptoms coming up.
Yes.
So.
Yes, that's why I look at my pictures when I was a kid. It reminds me. It reminds me of the time factor. You're lucky you got hair that grows. I don't have hair that grows. Maybe you can also pray for my hair or something that will grow again. Yes, the time factor is very subtle. That is a fact. No doubt about it. All right. Who else has a question?
Guru Maharaj, Hare Krishna, please accept my humble obeisances. This is
Radha Padma.
Gurudev, in the last verse, text 7. It says, when one has conquered the mind starts taking instruction from intelligence. Intelligence is...
Yeah.
Wait, someone else is talking. Let me cut.
Somebody,
yeah. Okay. That's right. I got them off. Now you can speak again, Radha Padma.
So in this text, mind needs to be conquered. And when mind is conquered, then the mind starts taking instructions from the intelligence. So is super soul the intelligence?
Well, super soul gives the intelligence, yes. See, the prophet said the intelligence and the super soul are this close. You see my expression? You know, the two fingers like that? Prabhupada said that intelligence and the soul, I mean intelligence and the super soul and the soul are this close. So we get our intelligence directly from super soul depending upon our desire. If we conquer the mind, then the desire remains pure. And then we get good intelligence from super soul, and then the intelligence is a representative of super soul's direction. Like Prabhupada said, intelligence is the form direction of the super soul. And that way you reach the super soul. It's pretty easy, you know. All intelligence comes from the super soul. All intelligence comes from the super soul. If we have pure desire, then we get pure intelligence from the super soul. In other words, we know exactly what the super soul wants rather than the super soul just fulfilling our wants. And then that puts us in touch with the super soul. Okay?
Yeah, thank you, Gurudev.
Thank you. So, one more question before we break for the evening. Oh, Krishna Priya. Okay, Krishna Priya, why don't you speak? You have to unmute yourself first. I can't hear you. Can you unmute yourself?
Yeah, I'm unmuted now. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
So my question relates to text 5. One must deliver himself with the help of his mind and not degrade himself. The mind is a right. friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. So my question right. is that from one lifetime to another, we hear how one carries the subtle body. You know, yeah. the subtle body carries the consciousness. So is it easier, let's say, for some people come into this world and they're naturally like more inclined towards sattva and the mode of goodness or towards spiritual life. They take birth in a good family. And then others might come into this world and they have a much more agitated mind or you know, previous some scars that they're not even aware of that cause them obstacles. So how can one... how could one recognize those and how can one progress and not be degraded by their previous desires from other lives?
That's a pretty good question. I think being humble enough to understand what our position is, many of us, we have an overinflated conception of ourselves. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yes, Gurudev.
And we actually think that we're more elevated than we actually are because we want to keep up with the Prabhus, as the statement goes. Keep up with the Gurus. So it pays to be humble, you know. I mean, actually, one definitely an advanced devotee thinks of himself or herself as being from having very low qualities. Like that's that poem by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, Gopinath.
Mm-hmm.
Gopinath, a materialistic rascal. Please take this sinner weeping to your Lord. I have no good quality. Mamana Veda Nashuno, Vishaya Durjana. I'm a Durjana. I'm a bad person. And so it really requires some humility. I mean, also, I think humility, now that I think of it, begins with admitting one's mistakes. One thing you'll see, here we go, political statement. One thing you'll see in the with the present person who's in charge of the United States, who cannot be named, he who cannot be named. One thing you'll see is that he never admits he makes a mistake. I can make that statement never because he's never, as far as my knowledge, he's never admitted that he's made a mistake. So we have to be at the point of just being ready to admit, oh yes, I made a mistake. I mean, just like let's see, what happened the other day? It was a very interesting thing the other day. One of the devotees wanted to offer nori to the deities. Nori is a type of seaweed, in case you don't know. And she called me up and she said, can I offer nori? I said, yeah, sounds good to me. And so she offered it to the deities. And then another devotee wrote me a letter saying, Prabhupada said no. And I said, all right, so I made a mistake. So big deal, you know, I made a mistake. So I said, all right, no more nori. But, you know, it's just like, so what? So what, if I made a mistake, Hare Krishna, you know, life goes on, you know. As long as I can eat prasadam, I don't care how many mistakes I make. So one has to be ready to actually see and admit. I mean, as you know, in my own dealings, I often talk about my own foibles openly. I'm not trying to put on an air that, you know, I've descended from the spiritual world. You know, sometimes disciples will say, you came from the spiritual world and you descended being sent by Krishna. And I said, no. I came from, God knows where I came from. But somehow or other in the last life, I was probably one of the cockroaches that Prabhupada stepped on by accident, you know, and that's why I am where I am today. So, I mean, what's the pleasure in puffing up yourself? There is no pleasure in that. In trying to appear like you're something other than what you actually are. I mean, people think that there's great pleasure, you know, all the world's a stage and everyone on it is a player, as Shakespeare says. There's no pleasure in that. I think everyone should just be honest, you know, just, of course, you know, guya makyati prichati. We should be ready just to say who we are. I just like, I'm not going to put on a show for people. I don't care. People like me, people don't like me. That's, you know, that's up to them. So I think once you're open like that and just say, you know, I am who I am, because that sounds like the Bible. When God was asked one time, Moses asked God, how should I explain to people? He says, tell people I am that I am. You know, but you know, we should just chill out, you know. Chill out and be regular people, you know. You know, I'm not on the level of Prabhupada. I'm just trying to serve Prabhupada. And I just want to be truthful. You know, this is Kali Yuga. The last principle of religiosity is untruthfulness. Truthfulness, yeah. And so untruthfulness is cutting it down. The propaganda, lying propaganda cuts down the truthfulness. So it's crazy. I mean, you see this in politics nowadays, that this lying propaganda is just like so is dominant. I mean, I am shocked when I read the news. What shocks me the most is how people just tell outright lies, and politicians are ready to speak in such a way that they don't admit that they made a mistake or lied. It's just shocking. I mean, nowadays, the politician means being able to cover the truth when someone asks you a question. You know, it's just like, or blame someone else. So I think we shouldn't succumb to this final snare of Kali, which is untruthfulness. Anyway, okay, on that happy note, I think it is time to end, because it's pretty soon it'll be Betty Bye time for me and time for Mangalarti. And you're all invited to join us for Mangalarti tomorrow morning. I'm on the East Coast of the United States. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.